Hello, good morning, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. Where are we today? What are we doing? What are we wearing? What excitement is going on a Friday morning? Seriously, what is... I mean, we're coming to you live from the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Art Studio. Live, that's what it is. Damradio.com/live is how you find us every single day. Monday through Thursday, I am doing International Flavor, and we talk about the more or less international news of the day. And then on Fridays, we engage in civic outlaws. We engage in what Jefferson said we needed to do, which was throw in a little revolution now and then, you know, a little bit of revolution now and again. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not required, but what else is a good patriot to do when he wants things to be better, but probably isn't willing to be an elected person? Sure as hell wouldn't want to work for the government, you know, because it leads to issues. leads to issues. Either have to join them or stay aloof from them. I suppose there's a lot of people at the basic level who just are, you know, do the administrators, and they like the benefits and they like all that stuff. But the higher you get, the worse it becomes, because you have to seize power. What else is there for an administrator, a politician, somebody to do? And so who's supposed to be the checks and balances on government? So when you're in your 10th grade civics, what do they tell you you have to do? You have to understand how government works, and you have to understand that there are three branches. There's the executive branch. We all know what they do. They act as the executive. They carry out things. They do. Those are the doers they're supposed to be anyway. And unfortunately, they often... Now, why was our government formed with three branches that are each supposed to be all of them, and as the word is, co-equal? So they're all equal together, right? But they're really not. I mean, think of how divided any legislative branch is. They're extremely divided, especially in America. We can't get anything done. And I suppose you could argue that in Europe and in other countries where they have more of a parliamentary sort of a deal where they have to form coalition governments and things like that, that it might be a little bit easier for them. I think they... except for the dictatorship types like Ursula von der Leyen and Kaya Kallas and those types, that really they're unelected. Those are just bureaucrats. The end. Bureaucracy always goes to the top. You know, it's like cream that sits for for a day, not even very long. It just starts going to the top immediately. All the nastiness that you don't want anything to do with goes to the top. And unfortunately, that's the executive branch, the people that love their power. And by God, you don't want to mess with those people. And they have nothing else in their lives. I mean, seriously, it's if they weren't out, you know, making sure that everyone else was better citizens, they're not better citizens. Everyone else has to be a better citizen. Then they wouldn't know what to do. They'd sit around and dream of being in charge, I guess. I don't know. And they just cannot help the seizure of power. So the nasty part of the cream rises absolutely to the top, and those people wouldn't know what to do without being the offensive portion of the cream. They wouldn't know what to do. They've just got to seize that power. And then you have the more passive types, and it seems odd to me that the governor hasn't said a word about gaming You know, what has he said about gaming? I did a quick look to see what happened or what his thought process is, and there isn't one, far as I'm aware. I don't see anything where he's coming out and saying what the gaming is. The legislature, they're trying. You know, 2 years in a row, the state reps have passed a bill to legalize these games, you know, these gaming machines. People play. So I have one small addiction. It's not an addiction because I don't play it that often, but it is something that I have played for, I don't know, 6-7 years. And every once in a while, I'll go back in and see how my little city is developing. You know, and go back and monitor, you know, what's going on. And usually the mafia is taking over something in this stupid game or whatever. And I don't know if anybody's ever heard of Sim City, but you go out and you build a city, you know. And I remember when I was a kid, I'd play this game. I still have it. Who knows? Who remembers the Dreamcast? The Dreamcast machine. And I played this game when my kids were little. And I always said I was going to buy, and it was just a car race game. You know, you get in, you race cars. Well, you don't even have to get in. You just sit on the freaking couch and race cars. But I always said I was going to build a little mini. I was going to go out in the garage, get my power saw, my table saw all jazzed up, and build a little car to sit in and put a fake screen in there just for the car so you didn't have to use a TV, and build my own freaking video game, you know, and use this a video game thing. But you play this video game and you come back and you watch your city you know, on your Sim City or whatever it is, and the mafia will have taken over, or the government will have corrupted itself. Why is it that even in video games they're all they're all taking over the world, you know? We gotta take over the world. I'm watching the TV right now. U.S. forces are bombing the crap out of Iran again. What the hell do we care? I mean, in all seriousness, when's the last time any American really gave a rip about what goes on in Iran? Seriously, you ever been there? Does it matter? I mean, do you want to look? I don't friggin' care about Iran. I'd like to go visit it. You know, I want to go see the history and the stuff like that. We're not the same people, but we spend days about all that stuff. And I'm a leave people the hell alone type of guy all the way down the line. You know, if you're Catherine Hanaway and creating issues for an Indian or Pakistani convenience store owner or a black owner of a convenience store in downtown or South St. Louis somewhere, or even a couple who dreams of owning a place and buys one that you know, we're born in America, you know, or aren't black or whatever. Why are we screwing with people of any type? What in the world? Why are we picking and choosing whether or not the Elks Lodge gets to have games in the back and serve alcohol? Oh, you can't do that. They're serving alcohol. Oh, boy. What if people play games and they get drunk? And they put more money in that machine than they want. Well, okay, if we're going to stop people from putting coins in a machine, let's outlaw Pac-Man, for God's sake. How much money did we waste on Pac-Man, or, well, me anyway, in my youth, or Galaga, or these stupid games? We need to protect Sam from himself. He's going to go out and waste money. You know, what are we going to do? He's going to go out and waste. Let's protect him. Yeah, they're going to protect me. So we outlaw crap that we don't have any interest in anyway. you know, and I don't have any interest in Pac-Man. It was a phase, I swear. It was just a phase. And so these stupid video, and they're not stupid to some people, you know. To me, I wouldn't, I have never sat in front of a, even a standard, what do you call it, slot machine. Okay, I used to go to Vegas all the time. Once, when I was real young and I was in the military service, I would go out and literally I would spend a weekend, every other weekend in Las Vegas. So I would fly from Washington, D.C. to McCarran Airport. You go out and you, first thing you see are a bunch of people popping stuff into slot machines in the airport. Then you get downtown, and back then they had it was right when they were starting to change away from these fantastic buffets, and you didn't get free food as much as you used to. But it used to be you'd go in and you'd get all the free food for a huge buffet for, I don't know, $1.99, because they want you to come for these fantastic buffets and then stay and waste all your money gambling. And they always had these. I never understood it because I just don't get it. You know, the people that sit in front of these slot machines and pump in money all day long. And I would much rather pump money into a card game, playing blackjack or poker, or I love craps. You know, this is gambling. What maybe Catherine Hanaway should rescue me from myself. Right. Oh, geez, we got it. But she don't care so long as you're regulating it. And for 2 years, the state of Missouri, through the legislature, the House of Representatives, has passed something to regulate. Okay. Meanwhile, she's all about destroying people's lives. Okay. She's all about these people are just bad people. No. If you take an analysis of the law, I want you to go out to my website and the article I wrote. Because I wrote an article. And you can go out to civicoutlaws.com and read it. And, you know, our website is about power, taking the power back, talking about these things that are just wrong, you know, nonsense. It's wrong what she's doing to businesses. It's wrong that she gets to judge, only her, in her great wisdom. Only she gets to judge. Well, Kristen Templeton too, and arguably Mark James. Kristen Templeton's the acting supervisor of ATC, and been acting in this role for 8 years, seven, I don't know, for a long time. And the governor hasn't even appointed her. She's not even appointed properly, and nobody, the government. Well, you know, if we can create our own power, great, but we don't have to follow the rules ourselves. I mean, geez, come on. It's the government. We anticipate that they're going to be incompetent. They're supposed to be. You know, oh, geez, you know, they have tough lives. You know, they're running the government. It's a tough life for these people. How are we supposed to anticipate that they will follow the rules that the powers that be have set for them? They don't have to follow the rules. How do you get a real supervisor of the alcohol tobacco control? How you get them is Mark James. And I don't know the guy. I don't know these guys. I don't, you know, I've never met him personally. Never met him. Might have met Templeton one day. I think I did. But I don't know her either. And I don't know Catherine Hanaway. I never met these people. I don't run in the same circles as these wise and powerful and wonderful people. And I'm one of the riffraff. You know, what did the Clinton monster call us? What are we? Well, I'm definitely deplorable. I've been deplorable for years, and you know, I'll swim in that ocean with the deplorable people. You know, I've limited desire in my life to associate with the rich and powerful. I've met the some of them. I like some of them, but I don't know that I'd hang out with them. you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know that I would fit into that crowd. I was in high school. I could get along with anybody, you know, and I always tried to. It's because I'm interested. You know what I mean? I'm interested in the different lives of different people. And I think that's the wonderful part of it. If we're all the same damn cookie cutter, what the hell's the point? You know, if you want to wonder what the point of life is, I haven't figured it out myself, but it sure as hell ain't sitting in a room and doing what you told me to do. And that is not my idea of life. If I'm running my life, the thing that's most important to me is travel. You know, I like to travel, and I'm getting a little antsy even now because I haven't gone anywhere. And I don't even have my passport back yet, and that's starting to get frustrating. But apparently I got a notification from the intermediary that I hired to get my Russian visa this time that should be any day now. And the finals were there. Everybody's going electronic when you have to file these. And we'll get into the ATC and their electronic stuff. But if you're going to get your Russian visa, you fill out an online application. Okay. And the application, you then print off, sign it, send it, you know, do whatever. But they always have it in the queue there, too. So you can go back and find it. And this time they asked me, you know, to send them the password. Like, what's the password to your application so we can get in there and print it, do something that we got to do. And I couldn't remember the password. And I don't know. I usually put a password in there, but I've been having password troubles lately. Do you know, speaking of government, and I realize this isn't government. This is like Microsoft, Google, all these other assholes did come and put your, they make you change your freaking password all the time. And it drives me batty. I've had an Apple account for 100 years, and I've got, I don't know, 1,800 movies and what do you call it? TV shows, you know, that you, and every once in a while you get logged out of everything everywhere, and you can't reset it unless you have an iPhone or an Apple or a Mac or something. And I don't have any. I haven't had them in years. I switched to Android in 2014. You know, I did iPhone 1, 2, 3. Every year you got to buy the new iPhone. I don't even know what they're up to now. iPhone 20? I don't know. But I switched to Microsoft phone when I lived in Qatar. I bought the really cool Microsoft. They had the best phones. And I switched to that. And then I chose, because it was, I ended up working for a company over there that sold Huawei phones. We supplied them to Ooredoo, which is like the T-Mobile of Qatar and the Middle East. It's all over. And in fact, I think Ooredoo is the same German company. There's a German company that runs T-Mobile and Ooredoo, and it's global. You know, it's freaking crazy. And I don't remember how all that works anymore, so don't quote me on how that worked. But I bought a Huawei phone, and this Huawei phone was fantastic. It had 4 SIM cards. It was way ahead of the Apple of its day, Apple, I don't know, 8, 9, whatever it was, the one I got rid of. And then my idiot son, nephew, who I was representing in a criminal case, stole my phone. How do you like that? He stole my phone, sold it to one of his buddies, and 6 months later, I'm in Qatar, and I
I logged into my Apple to do something. I logged in on there, and it has this little find. We found your phone. And this moron, my nephew, stole my brand new phone at the courthouse while I was representing him in some criminal deal. He's got drug issues, and I was representing him up there for my goofy sister who funded him and his drugs forever. And man, cut the kid off. And then while I'm representing him, he stole my phone. It's like, how? What kind of person does that? Seriously, I come for 4 hours away to represent your ass, and you steal my phone? And I found it, and it was pretty funny because I got on my phone in Qatar, and I called my telephone. And I called my telephone. It was now like, I don't know, 6 months later, you know, when I found the phone. And I don't know why I'm telling this stupid story. It's just idiotic, and it's not my topic for today. But my idiot nephew, he had stolen my phone, and he gave it to the kid that was sleeping with his sister, I guess, or sold it to him. And so I call the phone, and you have to go walk through some ways to get to the number. It allows you to put a message on their phone or on your own phone that says, you know, I've locked this phone. This is my phone. What the hell are you doing with my phone, basically? And the kid called me, and he's like, man, I bought this phone. I said, well, who the hell did you buy it from? He said, Nick. Or isn't it? No, his name was Zach. She has several kids. It was Zach. I was like, Zach, that shit sold my phone to you? And he goes, yeah, you know him? Yeah, he's my freaking relative. With relatives like this, who the hell needs the hell needs them? You know, well, I don't know who needs enemies. I guess it's who needs clients if you can just rent a criminal in your own family, right? I mean, you don't need to, you know, go get these entertaining times from anybody else. And you know, kid went to prison and sold the phone. You know, you need some money when you're, you know, for the commissary or something, you know, you have to. So whatever he did, he sold the phone. I was like, well, do you know my sister? And I said who my sister was. He goes, yeah, that's my girlfriend's mom. It's like, what the hell? He sells it to his sister's boyfriend, and nobody knows it's my phone. I mean, of course they wouldn't, but how the hell did he get it? And he sold it off to somebody else, and that was that. Anyway, I said, you know what? You take. I never did see the damn thing. I just told him to go drop it back off with my sisters, and I'd pick it up the next time I was there. And I don't think I ever did. It was a year later when I came back from Qatar, but I might have. Who knows? She might have given it to me the next year, next time I saw her. But I never see her either. You know, and I don't even know why I told that stupid story. It just got me going. And I've been all over the map this morning, and I apologize for that. But that was, it's still kind of funny. I don't think I've ever seen that kid again. That was 2014. I don't know. I guess he still has drug problems and he's in and out of rehab all the time, stuff like that. So, you know, I understand that people's lives are different is the point. And that the variety for me is being able to go and see other places, experience other cultures, not destroy them, not bomb the crap out of them, not say, oh gee, Israel's better than you, not say, you know, we can't go there because we disagree with their religious philosophy. If you're as narrow as all of that, perhaps it's better that you not go anywhere. You know, perhaps it's better that you don't try to see the beauty of the entire world, of everything that's out there. Qatar, in its own way, was freaking beautiful. You know, Morocco was freaking fantastic. You know, to go and see the history and, you know, Marrakesh was fantastic. Casablanca, you know, wow. you know, and these are some cool cities. There's a Jewish city in Morocco that has been around, and by the way, Morocco's a Muslim country. And there's a, I forget the name of the city, but there's a couple of, there's a blue city in Morocco. It's blue and white, and everything is blue and white. And it's just fantastic. You go in, the pictures are cool, and it's a kind of a cross between a sky blue and a royal blue. I don't know how to describe the color, but it's a beautiful blue. And the entire city is painted blue and white, and you can walk around it, and it's these old stone buildings, been around for a century. And I mean, it's been around a long time, and good restaurants, nice shops, very touristy, of course, and plenty of tourist places in there. My wife would call them every time you'd go to one of these places, especially in the Middle East. Not just the Middle East, Southeast Asia too, the Muslim parts of it, when you or the Far East, if you Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, all those places. She liked to call them the Lovushka, which is a trap. Lovushka is a like a, if you're going to catch a mouse or something, you put out a lovushka. And then she would like to, she liked the joke of it's a trap, because my last name is Trap. And she'd say, we want to go down to the trap, you know, and the trap is the market. It's called a yarmarka in Russia. It's called, you know, a trap if you're in the Middle East, because it's, I forget what they call them, but you can go in, and usually it's in these old places with the stone walls around it, and you can go and get stuck in there the whole day. They have these beautiful, what do they call those? The Muslim bathhouses that are, what do they call those? And you can go and get hammam. It's called hammam. And you go and you do hammam. They're fantastic. So the Russian bathhouses are really cool. And the Muslim bathhouses, or the Middle Eastern, the equivalent, is they have these different rooms. And you go in there, and they have a hot room. They got a steam room. And then, you know, the attendant will come in and scrub your body down with these... like your loofah, get a loofah, and they will take the loofah in the shower, but they're a big one made of sponge or something, and they'll rub down your entire body. They'll hose you down with this really hot natural waters that come out of the ground, the istochniki, and I mean, hammam is just freaking awesome. It's a 4 or 5 hour event. You go in there. You can do it alone or with couples or whatever. And you go in, they lay you on a stone slab. It's like an altar. And they lay you on this thing. It's a room for two. And you're laying in there. And, you know, they cover your nether regions with a small towel or whatever. And then they hose you, they hose you down. They scrub you all down. And, you know, and on the Muslim side, they have it for just women too, because a woman can't be in the same house with a man unless she's married to him. You know, stuff like that, and they verify it. So it's really kind of a little bit puritanical. But if you get a chance to go to hammam, somebody told me there's a hammam in St. Louis somewhere, and I was thinking about going and trying to find it. The reason I tell you all this is the regulatory part of it. This is cultural, okay? It's culture. I mean, nobody even knows what a hammam is, and people are like, what the hell is that? You know, but I found out. And by the way, it's something I would do again. The Russian bathhouse, I would absolutely, I want to build one. I think it'd be great to have a Russian bathhouse somewhere and have a couple of Russians who really understand it, and I've met several of them come down, and there's medical benefit to it, and, you know, and they jump in the cold water, jump back out, and run to the hot water. I mean, it's a friggin' process, and the Russians love it. There was a house in Florida. There's a really nice couple. Lives in a decent house. They don't even work anymore. This is what they do. They, you know, they both had jobs before, and they, I think, are Ukrainian or Belarusian or something like that. I can't remember, but they might be Ukrainian. And I was hanging out with this Ukrainian dude named Piotr. And Piotr, Peter, basically. And Piotr was an interesting cat. And he was Ukrainian. He had been in the Ukrainian army. He went in Soviet times. He was in the Soviet army, but the Ukraine is where it is. Now, they don't do the same with you and send you. Well, doesn't matter. We don't need to talk about that stuff. But he and I and Lana, a couple other people that we knew, all went to this bathhouse. And so on Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, sometimes Thursdays, this couple would open up their home and had built a Russian bathhouse in the back of the house. And what they would do is have a buffet of Russian foods, you know, pilmeni, pirozhki. They'd have some borscht. They'd put some kotleti. I really love kotleti and, you know, making those. It's basically a big-ass meatball, right, that they make in there. And, you know, these and it'd be tube shaped, you know, it's like a mini meatloaf, you know, and I like making those mini and they'd make these ogorshki, these little pots of I don't know, throw tons of Russian food, and I just love it all. And they'd have all kinds of stuff in there, and they would make all this food and lay it out, and it started at like 6 o'clock, and it would go 6 o'clock to 11 or midnight if they were singing karaoke. They'd have a karaoke thing. There was a dude who wrote who was very famous during Soviet times that had popular songs, and he was always there, and he'd sing. You know, he'd do karaoke. They'd have TVs everywhere, 4 or 5 TVs all full of Russian videos and stuff like that, and we'd all be sitting there chatting in Russian. I met a guy there who was married to a Ukrainian girl that did the exact same thing that I did in Washington, D.C., and just like me, Scott Ritter, you know, the crowd was fairly small that did that work at the on-site inspection agency that would speak the, you know, this guy was an interpreter just like I was. And, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. But he and I haven't lost it, you know, and we'd sit there and chat with them, and they couldn't believe it. They were like, wow, Americans don't speak Russian, not at the level that you speak. You know, certainly it's not an easy language. And I'm not saying we're God's gift to the planet. We aren't. It's just you have to use it or you lose it. And culturally, I pay attention to the culture. And so you'd go and you do these bathhouses. And the rule was, because people that speak Russian could be from Belarus, they could be from Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, they could be from Poland, they certainly could be from Ukraine, you know, the bulk of the people there. Russian was the language forever, and they've only in the last 30 years outlawed Russian and tried to change the history of Ukraine by saying that the Banderovsi were the real people, and our NGOs help fund that. And so there's plenty to talk about with these people who lived it and experienced real government overreach. I mean, serious government overreach, where the government, and I believe that our government still has the capability and still does the same thing, that they're, I don't necessarily believe that our government is pure. Let's put it that way, that people haven't been killed by the government to hide secrets, to keep things covered, and that people with power haven't done what people with power always do. And so I've always been against it, but I'm not against it. Just be an administrator. Do what you're, but do what the government brought you on to do, okay? And these people lived that. Many of them came over before the Soviet Union. This Piotr guy had come over 20 years ago or something, and he opened up his house to all these Ukrainians. And he'd invite us to his house, and we'd go over for, he'd put on a spread also. Food is a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal in every culture, but I mean, you don't... My wife used to say to me, you can't go to somebody's house. Just going to somebody's house implies that they're going to feed you. And I was like, what? She, yes, if you go, they have to serve you. They got to give you food. I was like, why? That's just how it is. You can't go to somebody's house and not be offered food. It's truly offensive. It's offensive if they don't offer you food. And I was like, well, that's nuts. And she goes, you're an American. You don't get it. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll have to figure it out. But I had never... Of course, I didn't go hanging out with, in Russian homes either when I went over there. I did a few times with the, went to the house or the apartment of the, of a guy who was an interpreter for their equivalent of the, and the treaty group, you know, that they would do their, that I got invited to his house, and he was a colonel in the probably in the KGB at the time, but he was just military is what he said to me, and he was a professor of English at the Moscow State University as well, and he invited me over to his apartment, and he had this really cool apartment, and he put the parquet floors. I'm really all over the map today, and that's not what I intended to talk about. But we would get into so many discussions about the power and the difference of governments and how the governments worked. I did the same thing in Qatar, met some Qataris, and we'd sit down with them. My boss was Lebanese, and he and I would go to lunch once a week and chat, and he would introduce me to Lebanese foods, and he would tell me about, he was educated in San Francisco. He's a really nice guy. And would tell me about, you know, he thought it was funny that I showed him my computer one time about something. He was going to help me or have one of his guys help me fix it, and it opened up, and the internet was on Fox News for some reason. One of the tabs was on Fox News. And he just rolled his eyes, says, oh, no, you're one of those. And I said, I don't understand what that means. And I'm not really one of those. It's just if you think there's some sort of news that I watch lots of different music or music news. I get my news from various sources, and that's one of them. And he goes, oh, you can't listen to them. And he'd go off on it. He goes, don't you understand what they're doing? He goes, all they're doing is pumping war. And we would have discussions on this, worldview discussions. And it was pretty interesting to talk with people who are different, who have a different thought process than we do in America. And, I always remember picking juries and whatnot, especially in those cases with a corrupt cop or with a bad cop who's acted in a bad way. You know, I did several trials where girls were used as the personal sex slaves to guards in the jail, you know, and it's... people don't like that that topic at all. And there's a strong belief in many, many people, especially in mid-Missouri, that the cops are always right. And oh, they have a hard job, and we can't hold them to that. That their videos, when they disappear, well, you know, those are technical glitches. You know, if their body cam's not working, that's a technical glitch. If the video on the front of their car isn't working, they'll apologize for bad behavior on the part of a policeman endless. They have tough jobs. Look what they're doing. They're out protecting you. Don't bet on it. Don't bet on that. I've had the shit beat out of me by a cop or two, and I know other people have as well. And frankly, I didn't deserve it even then, and I wasn't the greatest of citizens on that day anyway. But I didn't deserve that.
And I, for one, hold them to a much higher standard. And I believe in the opposite. They're supposed to be the consummate good guys. And I expect more from the people who choose to get into that area. And I don't anticipate that they're going to trade blowjobs for cigarettes in the jail, or they're going to plant evidence on somebody in keeping of the greater good. Those people need to be fried worse than a criminal who's just a criminal, because a cop's not supposed to be a criminal. And the bad actors really make it crappy for those that are good. And I want to, I want to support law enforcement, but I don't blindly do so. And I think that far too often in America, well, everywhere, people tend to believe. They want to believe. You don't want to think that things are as nasty as they are, but they are. They're nasty, and they're just people. They're no different than you. And if the opportunity comes up, they might fudge the numbers. They might plant the drug to for the greater good, But they're in the same pressures as you. They're in the same pressures of I had a cop pull me over not long ago, and if I told this, but it just pissed me off, and it pisses me off even more the longer I think about it, because it's the comfort that this kid had. When he come up to my window, he's all swatted out, and you're going, Jesus, is this necessary? This guy's packing gear like he's prepping to go into Sarajevo in 1984 or whatever that was. It's like he's this boy is loaded for bear. I was wondering when his why he didn't have an automatic, AK-47 or a M203 grenade launcher or something. He probably did, and I just didn't see it. But this guy was packing. He's like twice his size because he's covered with all this SWAT gear, like he's raiding a drug lord's home or something. And it's overkill. It's just nuts. And this kid comes up to the window and he says, I said, why the hell did you pull me over? I was like, well, I didn't do anything. I don't even speed anymore. I'm a reformed man, I swear. Maybe you pulled my license plate. You saw all the tickets I had years ago, but I haven't had a ticket in forever. I couldn't even tell you. It had to be, I don't know. It's 2016, 2017, something like that. And I change my evil ways. I swear I didn't say all that, but that's what I'm thinking. I was like, what the hell? And he goes, and get this. So I'm turning right at there's an acute angle. And if you remember your obtuse and your acutes, the acute's the one that is, say the angle is like a 30 degree angle. It's not a perpendicular crossing of the road. It's an acute angle. And I'm turning right and I'm coming from the bottom and I'm making a very sharp turn to get on to the roadway. Two lanes headed in the direction I want to travel. And it's impossible in my truck to pull out and not cross the first lane because the truck's too big. And so, especially at the angle that we're talking about. Now, if I was at a perpendicular angle, I could have taken it, turned right, moved on. So it is impossible at that corner to turn into the first lane of traffic without going into the second lane. So you come out, you go into the second one, you turn. I was going to stay in the second one anyway because I was turning left as soon as I pulled over. Trouble is, it's a Saturday afternoon and there's a bar. I wasn't at the bar. I was at the building next door to the bar. But there's a lot of people in the bar traffic. It's the lake.
and it was late in the afternoon. So I make this turn, and I pull into the second lane, stayed in it, and I swear to God, in 2 seconds, there's lights behind me, and I was like, Jesus, I just got on the road. I literally just pulled out of the parking lot. What the hell? I haven't done anything. And the guy pulls me over. I pull into the grocery store that I was headed to anyway, and safe spot, and all that. It was fairly crowded roads that day, and he comes up to the door all decked out in his SWAT gear. I don't know what I've done, but boy, I'm interested in finding out. And he says, you turned into the second lane. I said, and? And he says, well, you can't do that. You got to turn into the first lane of traffic. And I was like, oh, and he's trying to look into my truck. He's trying to look, see if I don't know what. Maybe I got some contraband in there. Who knows? And he's checking me out. And, I was like, Jesus, this guy's antsy. He's got troubles. He's ready for bear. He's waiting for me to screw this up somehow. And it's like, well, what have I done? And he tells me that I pulled out. I said, well, I said, you ever pull out of that corner? I was like, you can't. Good luck. It wasn't intentional. And he goes, he takes my information. He goes, sits back in his car. I'm waiting to get whatever ticket I'm going to get. And he comes back. He says, I'm not going to ticket you. I said, well, okay. I said, whatever it was, wasn't intentional. Anyway, there ain't no way I could have made that turn into the first lane. No freaking way. I said, do you want to get in? And I'll show you. We'll go back and we'll do it. I can't do it there. And he goes, well, and these are his words. He says, well, I really was, I thought you were at that bar. And I thought, you were coming out drunk. Now, I didn't get into it with him, but that pissed me off like nothing else. That right there is an indication of the bullshit that goes on in the mind of a policeman, okay? That person came out of the parking lot near the bar, therefore, I got a good chance of picking up a DWI and pulling him over. Maybe you support that type of behavior. Maybe you support that, well, geez, somebody came out of a bar, therefore he must be checked. No. First of all, if you're paying that much attention, you would see that I hadn't come out of the bar because I came out of the building across the street from the bar. And the car was parked across the street from the bar. And granted, people aren't stuck with, you could park anywhere, I suppose, and go into the bar. But the logical leap that this guy made, that I was perfectly fine to be pulled over, and he made an excuse to pull me over. That was a pretextual stop. That's what that was. And he pulled me over on a pretext to verify whether I had alcohol on my breath. That's what he did. And could a reasonable lawyer have gotten him on that? If you have a preliminary hearing, could a reasonable lawyer have fought the oversight if that was necessary? Could that have been done? Probably so. But meanwhile, let's say that what he actually surmised was going on is turned out to be right. Let's say that I was in the bar, that I came out, got in my car, and made the effort, to turn and keep in that first lane, and still made it into the second one, and he pulled me over, and I'd had one drink when I was in there, but I had alcohol on my breath. Suppose that would make a difference? It's an easy arrest. I smelled alcohol in his breath, so I, lit him up, and that was it. And does the end justify the means? And that is always the problem with government overreach. In their mind, the end always justifies the means. So I can take bad behavior of my own, and they don't even think that's bad behavior. You know, I always had fun with the fact that a cop, and it's not fun. It's bullshit. Frankly, it's crap, complete crap. I detest this fact. Okay, but it's fact. If you lie to a police officer, if you lie, you've just committed a crime. You've lied to a police officer. If a police officer lies to you to get you to talk, he's done good police work. You know, imagine all the movies that you've ever seen where they just come flat out lie to you and say, well, you know, Jim Bob's in the other room over here and he's ratting you out right now, so perhaps you should rat him out. Jim Bob, they haven't even arrested yet. Jim Bob ain't in the other room. They have no evidence of any kind. They're just trying to get you to talk, right? That's okay. They can lie to you the whole time. Oh, geez, wait a minute. There are nuclear explosions going on all over the world. Don't you want to come clean before the world ends? Yeah, I'm sorry. I need to come clean. I really did cheat on that exam in seventh grade. You know, and I did pull the pigtails of Mary, who was sitting in front of me, and then I blamed somebody else. You know, I need to come clean. Aha! You've created these. You've engaged in these crimes, but they get a lie to get you to do it. That's good police work. But if you go, nah, you know, I wasn't even in the room. They go, well, we got you on the video pulling Mary Jane's pigtails. And we got a video of you stealing so-and-so's paper, putting your name at the top, turning it in. It's like, okay, all right, I admit it. But they don't have those things. They don't even, you know, wait a minute. You lied to me to get me to talk. Why is it one? And I don't care about it. You want to lie about it, lie. But it's that's a personal philosophy. But don't go make it a crime for somebody to lie to a police officer. You should anticipate he's going to lie to the police officer. What kind of crap is that? I'm going to charge you for lying. Jesus, there's a lot of people going down for that. The cops all lie to each other, tell them their stories. And just like in the military, everybody has to one-up themselves on the story. Oh, yeah. I remember when I was back, you'd hear it all the time. I heard stories that were my stories from other people. And you go, well, that's not your story, you little shit. That's my story. You weren't even there. Like, what are you talking about? And people would, you know, come up with them, and it was pretty funny. There's just an tendency to do that, right? To tell all their stories about whatever greatness they were in. You know, I knew. I won't tell that one. But there's. I think it's offensive, and there were people who pretend that they were in some form of, you know, they were in the Iraq war and they worked in the motor pool. And it's funny how many people are special forces, you know, and, we were on the IED squad and we went to, yeah, right. There's like eight people in the division who do that. And suddenly there were 50 people there. Come on. It doesn't work that way. And so you got to kind of take those things with a little bit of grain of salt. Anyway, I've babbled a little bit today, and I do want to get to my article about power and taking it back, and what we need to do to take it back. And I have some ideas. But first, we're going to play a song that I haven't heard in a billion years, but I'm going to play it. And this one, actually, I'd never heard this song before, and I should have back in the 80s or whatever it is. It was my ex-wife that introduced me to this song, and I was like, I don't know why, but I just like that song. And kind of odd. She's the one that introduced me to, didn't introduce me, but helped me develop my
Depeche Mode fixation. And then we went and saw Depeche Mode. I saw him once without her. And I think we saw him 3-4 times together. I was always a Depeche Mode fan. Thought it was, we saw him in Dallas once, and that was pretty cool. But she had some good musical tastes. And so this one is Sam's ex-wife's music that he stole from her, something that she liked. And she had some pretty good ones, and this happened to be one. Now that was a fun song. That's Shriek Back is the name of the group, Shriek Back, and the song is Nemesis. Oh, the 80s were wonderful. Were they not? Well, I got a bit sidetracked a little bit this morning discussing the pros and cons of government overreach and how in many, many respects, basically what people are doing is imposing their morality or lack thereof on you. And nowhere is that more prevalent than in these idiotic contortions of a power grab and taking power regarding these VLT video lottery terminals that I've been talking about. And I haven't heard the governor talk about it at all. Okay. The governor, I haven't been able to find anything where the governor has taken a position. But he's allowing the executive branch through the AG's office to create a slaughterhouse of business and destroying people's lives and charging people with felonies. You know, I've had in the last week the opportunity to review the charges against the gentleman who owns the Eagle Stops or whatever they're called, and he wrote a letter to a bunch of legislators. He did something I do, and more power to him. You know, it's a well written letter. I don't have a copy of it here with me. I wonder if I have it in my bag of tricks. I might. I think that I do. Let me see if I can come up with it for you. Because he's right, you know, and he's, it's a long letter, and he's angry about it, and he should be. It's an irritating thing what's happened to him, and actually I don't think he wrote it. I think somebody in his organization wrote it for him, and I wanted to. He wrote a legislative letter. It's from Eagle Stop, and the letter is written to the members of the Missouri General Assembly, the governor, and the office of the Missouri Attorney General. And, you know, this is actually, you know what, this is a guy getting screwed by the system. Okay. And people get screwed by the system all the time. And, but there's no reason for this. And I mean, none, you know, they're not doing any good here. It'd be different if Catherine Hanaway and her ilk were doing the right thing. They're not doing the right thing. They're making a name for themselves. That's it. They're seizing power that doesn't necessarily belong to them by creating an interpretation that, that frankly is incorrect. You know, it's not correct, and nobody's stopping them. The governor ain't doing crap about it. Governor didn't stop them. And, this letter, I think I might put his letter on my Civic Outlaws. Maybe I'll post it out there. because it is a little bit on the long side. But basically, the summary, it's 3.5 pages. Let's see. 4.5 pages. So, and it's well written, signed by a guy named Nick Leper is who he wrote it. And I assume that the guys that have been charged, they charged the guy, they charged his daughter, you know, in one county. So 4 or 5 counties. I mean, this is crap. And the crap of it all is you take a regulatory confusion in the state of Missouri, regulatory inaction in the state of Missouri, overaction by a federal judge, and declare something that is not, you can't take. Remember we talked the other day about foundation, and you have to have a proper foundation for the content. Marco Rubio does this crap all the time, like I was explaining the other day with respect to him saying, Straits of Hormuz are international waters. Just because they have been allowed to be international waters doesn't mean that 12 miles on one side and 12 miles on the other, which is the international law of the sea, isn't the property of Oman on the one side and the property of Iran on the other. And if Oman and Iran choose to block it off and charge people money, well, they can do it. And there's no international prohibition against that. So if you take the initial comment, and this happens all the time, people take a bad foundational argument, a bad foundational or a basis for the argument, and extrapolate it into something else, which is exactly what Catherine Hanaway and her crowd have done. They've taken a judge's ruling in a case that has nothing to do with criminal law at all, nothing, and a judge who's overreached in a certain step, and a very, very particularized ruling, and expanded it into a great big broad sweep to beat the crap out of people that don't know it's coming and can't, you know, they can't explain why. She can't tell you why. You know, why? Because it's wrong. You've decided it's wrong. And so therefore, you get to just interpret it the way you want to interpret it. But 536.140 says you're not allowed that luxury. You don't get to interpret. Only a court gets to interpret, not you. And so I have serious problems with this. I mean, am I affected by this? No. You know, I don't own a convenience store. You know, I don't have any video games except my SimCity. And sometimes I play this Mafia game, and sometimes I play this, Japanese one, where you take tiles and you sort them out. Mahjong, I think. Every once in a while I'll throw up some Mahjong, but I wouldn't touch I'll go to a casino all day long. Love it. It's good stuff. But I won't play a slot machine. Never. I've been into hundreds of convenience stores, and the fact that they have these games that are up there that people can waste their own money on doesn't bother me. Why should it? If it's an agreement, you know, if somebody agrees to put their money in a machine, and somebody offers a machine and agrees to accept their money, what in the hell do you have to do with it? If you and by the way, taxes come off of the revenue of those games for the state of Missouri. What's the harm? Seriously, you're the type of person who would go over and incite people in Morocco to not like the Jewish community, or the Jewish community to not like the centuries-long Muslim relationship they've had with their neighbors. You know, in that blue and white city. It was really, really cool. His name, I can't remember. But I don't get it. I don't get the need to tell other people what they can and cannot do. I don't get it. You know, that's not law enforcement. That's bullshit. You know, that's crap. That's the officer coming up to my window and trying to smell my breath because I came out of the wrong parking lot at the wrong time of day. That's crap. That is not police work. That's bullshit. That's playing luck of the draw. And as soon as he found out I hadn't had any drinks, you know, all he wanted to do was get out of there. He didn't even write me a ticket. Oh, yeah, well. And he even admitted it. He's like, well, I thought you were coming out of the parking lot. And what would that have changed? Seriously, what would it change if I happened to be coming out of the parking lot? I don't like that targeting. Do you know, we were going to do a study this year, and I think we're still going to do it. We're going to put cameras up. We're going to ask a bunch of bar owners to let us put up cameras and video what goes on outside of their locations. And there's some particularized areas we want to do. And watch the do it on behalf of Civic Outlaws. Do it on behalf of Missouri Licensing Advocacy Group, MOLAG, which is a 501c6. We can lobby. And I want to lobby. I do lobby. I talk about this crap with as a lobbyist with state reps. And I publish these articles and I give them to everybody because this is crap. It's just not right. And anybody who knows me knows that I started talking about this type of bullshit years ago on KRMS radio every Saturday. Frankly, I think it's part of the reason they targeted me as a lawyer. And I started doing, I sued the state on a number of occasions for this stuff. And the reason I lost my license, all right, I'll submit. And I did, and I do. But I don't submit to what the assholes did to me afterward. You have a corrupt process. It's an extremely corrupt process. And it's a targeting and a nonsensical process. And it's not right what they did to me. It's not right what Hanaway is doing right now. And what do I have to lose anymore? You stole my life. I will be happy to point out the error of your ways. In fact, you want to come on the program, I'd be happy to chat with you about it. You won't, because you don't have any answers for what I'm giving you. All you got are little propaganda statements. You don't want to have an intelligent, moral, intellectual, whatever, argument about the basis for it. You won't come on. I challenge you. Any one of you. I have we're allegedly got a meeting with a couple of legislators that are going to allow to do it. And I've been talking a lot about this, obviously. And I've provided my thought process to a number of legislators, and I'm getting it to all of them. As this latest article that I wrote, and I think you should go out. You can go out and find it at civicoutlaws.com. It's on the blog portion, and you can get to the latest article. And the article is entitled Regulating by Threat Letter and Targeted Enforcement. And I'm going to share it with you. Missouri senators, convenience store owners, liquor license holders, and anyone who still thinks government power should stay in its appropriate lane needs to pay attention to what is happening right now. Catherine Hanaway has unilaterally decided that there is no such thing as a gray market or for VLT machines, video lottery terminal. ATC acting state supervisor Kristen Templeton has connected the same theory to liquor licenses and how to take them. She doesn't have that authority, not remotely. And somewhere between these two offices, and Mark James is in on it too, but he's a little more quiet. He's allowing these ladies to run roughshod over people. Well, he can't do anything about the attorney general, but he is Kristen Templeton's supervisor, allegedly. He didn't appoint her properly, but that's who's holding the spot. And, you know, he's supposed to submit it to the governor and do something about it, but he never done that either. But somewhere in between, Missouri businesses are being destroyed. They're told to unplug, shut down, remove machines, sign papers under oath. They got to, you know, take an oath now. I swear I'm not a communist, Mr. McCarthy. I'm not. Yeah, well, sign this oath. We got you, commie. And these are, you know, this McCarthyist type of activity just drives me batty, let's say. I was going to say bat shit crazy, but I won't talk like that on the radio. And these people have to accept the state's interpretation before any Missouri court has ruled on it. You know, no Missouri court has ruled that any machine that looks like a slot machine, no court has said, those are slot machines. Anything that looks like, hell, your fucking iPad can look. I really shouldn't talk like that, and I apologize. Your iPad can look like a slot machine. It doesn't make it a slot machine, okay? And it's nonsense, and I'm really sorry. I normally do talk like that, but I try not to talk like that on the program. That's not nice. But this isn't clarity. Hannaway's not providing clarity. She's providing confusion. And she's providing pressure. Government actors taking Missouri's uncertainty and turning it into criminal liquor license or financial punishment and using that club to beat a Missouri business owner is just not right. You know, the guy running the Eagle Stops, that is crap. You know, that is nonsense. You take confusion and inaction by the legislature and decide to arrest somebody who has nothing to do with it over that, I'll condemn you for it. That's crap. That is complete crap. You don't even have any evidence. Well, did you go in? Did you go in and analyze his machines first to find out that they are torch machines? That's the only rule in, if you can arguably make it, that Judge Ross made in the Eastern District. That's it. Judge Ross said these particular machines are illegal. Does that make every machine, every iPad illegal in the state of friggin' Missouri? No. That doesn't make it that way. Could you make an argument that so-and-so, that the Eagle Stop has something? I suppose you could. You could go in there, but what if his machines are different? And they are, but what? I mean, they're not torch. I mean, does she get to presume? Which she has. She did it. She's the one who put out the circular. What's her circular say? I got the link to that, too. Her circular. Here's what she says. Torch has agreed to suspend their operation. She has that. Felony charges against Green. Four-count operation. Where's the no gray area one that she put out? Damn it, I don't have it in my little list of stuff. But she basically says on PBS or something like that several weeks ago, there is no, you know, we take that to mean, we take this ruling in a civil case, where, by the way, in a civil case, it's preponderance of the evidence. And in a criminal case, it's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt established by a jury. We take the position that a judge in an unrelated, money-related case where one company is suing another, and a judge made a ruling to effectuate the findings of the jury, and there's an appeal, and in my humble opinion, I believe there's a good chance for that appeal to be heard and resolved in favor of Torch and not TNT. I don't believe they're going to win ultimately. I think they're going to spend a lot more money, you know, going forward on this. And that there's a strong possibility they lose it. But there's also plenty of law that says a civil court in Missouri can't set criminal laws, which, by the way, Torch was involved in one of those in 2019, where Judge Green made a ruling, sent it up to the appellate court. Appellate court said, nope, Dan's right. We're not gonna overturn Dan's ruling that... you know, I'm not getting involved here because there's no current dispute. You know, you're not being targeted right now criminally, and you haven't alleged that it's unconstitutional. All you're doing is trying to get a declaratory judgment that your machines don't meet that definition, and I'm not willing to do that. It didn't say that they were illegal, or that could have been a helpful part for going after Torch. But you don't get to go against every place that has any similar machine. You don't get to do it. It's you have to prove that case. I'm on the criminal side. I'm going, look, what did they know beforehand? Hell, you could get rid of it at the preliminary hearing and say they don't have any evidence of this. They have none of this. I'd have the preliminary hearing. Absolutely. And I would quiz those people, and I would hire some good friggin' attorney and go to the preliminary hearing and make the, you know, and unfortunately, people are dealing with their lives and livelihoods, and they can't spend $200,000 defending themselves because they're already losing themselves. And this is what the Hanaways and Templetons and Jameses of the world know. They got them over a barrel because they're bleeding financially everywhere. And this is government overreach at its worst. Destroying lives. How many people does the Eagle Stop group of places employ? I don't know. How many locations they got? 30, 50? I don't know. I don't know. But it's a bunch. You know, it's a bit, they're a big player. And so they have these machines. So now they've been labeled drug lords, you know, mafia guys. These are criminals. These are the bad Russians. You know, they must be Russian, right? They must be Putin stooges, right? Anything bad you can now give to them because the attorney general has decided that there's no gray area. No proof. You know, proof, that's unnecessary. We don't need that. Proof. What are you talking about, proof, Sam? Come on. Everybody knows they're breaking the law. Why? Because I told them they were. I told everybody that they are breaking the law. And if I can make an example out of one of the big boys, everybody will fall into line and, you know, lay down, put their hands behind their backs, and all we got to do is walk in and arrest them. We didn't even have to pull them over to check their breath. They just admitted they were driving guilty. I mean, why don't we do that now? I came out of a bar, therefore, I'm guilty of drunk driving. I mean, officer, no offense, but I don't need you anymore. You don't have to investigate a damn thing. It's over. I was in the parking lot across the street from a bar, and therefore, I am guilty of drunk driving. It's the same thing. It's the same analysis. Wait a minute. There's white dust on the counter. That means this guy is using cocaine. We've arrested him. We put him in jail. Why? We don't have to tell what the dust was. Obviously, the guy's a criminal. You know, who needs evidence? I mean, geez, there's dust on the counter. You know, and a credit card nearby. You know, there's a credit card laying on there, and obviously, that's it. Well, the fact that there's a baking sheet right next to it full of cookies doesn't enter into it, does it? The fact that not all machines are built by the same manufacturer, have the same innards, means nothing, does it? I mean, let's shortcut all of that and just say, as Catherine Hanaway has done, there is no gray market. And when you get to the ATC, why is it always the ATC? You know, this lady isn't even appointed properly for 8 years. Why can you not appoint somebody the way they're supposed to be? Why are you the acting supervisor for 8 years? I don't get it. You know, it makes no sense. Somebody say why. Because what's supposed to happen, and I've iterated this before, is it's supposed to be you appoint, you know, Mark James, you appoint a supervisor. You make a recommendation. You give the governor a name, two names, three names. It's not clear how many he's supposed to give, but he's supposed to give names to, or a name, to the governor, and the governor
chooses to appoint her, does that mean she's really working for him or not? Does he even know her? Has he ever met her? Does she work for the governor? Has Mark James ever met her? I assume so. But what do we know? He hasn't recommended her to the governor. Why not? Why not? When are you going to do your flipping job? Go out, appoint somebody so that there's no acting supervisor, so people like me don't have questions about when you're going to do your damn job. I mean, wait. We forgot. It's hard to be a state employee. It's very difficult. We have so much to do. We'll never get through. And so, you know, we'll forgive them the fact that, you know, they just saw the dust on the table and therefore the guy needed to be charged with, cocaine or being a drug user. Or that he pulled it, he was in a parking lot. Therefore, he's guilty of a DWI. And I was just, making sure that he was. That's nonsense. You don't have any evidence that I even came out of the bar. It's nonsense. And I didn't come out of the bar. I was working. And it's crazy. And it's the exact same thing. Shortcut. It's a shortcut to say that all white dust is cocaine. It's a shortcut to say anybody pulling out of a parking lot next to a bar on a weekend is guilty of drunk driving. And it is definitely a shortcut to say that any video game is a, there is no gray market. It's either black or white. You're either a slot machine or you're not. Well, where's the not in this case? Is there a not? She says there is no gray area if it's not gray. Therefore, it's all black, right? I mean, if you're choosing the black as the side that's the, going to be the ones that do make it a slot machine. They're all on one side or the other. No such thing as in the middle. Nothing. No such thing as a legal one. By the way, I've seen some devices that have been said, these are legal under the state of Missouri. I've seen them. I've seen the reports. I've seen the expert opinion that says here's what it is. I don't want to really talk about it today. I want to wait another week on this one. But we've been researching this. We've been going further and further. MOLAG, a Missouri licensing advocacy group. These people are targeting your liquor licenses. ATC is targeting your liquor license. This is nonsense. And they get to go in and say, if you have questions, and the letter that the ATC writes is, obviously this thing may be appealed, what's going on with Torch, so we don't really know whether they're legal or not, but we're telling you that if you have a game in your spot, we're coming for your liquor license, basically. Check with your counsel, but we're coming. Yeah, we can't give you any advice except they're all illegal because Catherine Anaway says so. That's not clarity. That's BS. And, I invite her to come on. She could come on and tell me her position. I'd love to debate her. That'd be great. Catherine Anaway, I'll debate you all day long. I want you to outline to me why you think this way. That's not very lawyerly of you. Evidence, that can come later. We'll throw that part in there. Well, here it is, Friday morning. We're winding down. I probably should have started earlier, and I got distracted during the beginning with a couple of things that are there. I'm headed to Florida tonight. That'll be entertaining. And I'll see you next week for my International Flavor Show. Monday through Thursday from 7:30 to 9 here at damradio.com/live. And on Friday, hopefully we have some news for the masses of some stuff that we are working on. Rather dramatic events coming your way next week. On behalf of MOLAG, on Missouri Licensing Advocacy Group. You can go out to molag.org, check us out. Go out to civicoutlaws.com and check out the
prior shows or any of the articles that I've written, including the one that I just wrote called Regulating by Threat Letter and Targeted Enforcement. I appreciate you being here, and I will see you next week.